Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is a Design for Living Big Book meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. My name is Nikki, and I am a compulsive overeater and your chairperson for today. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. We start this meeting by remembering our common purpose to extend the heart and hand of the OA Fellowship to those who still suffer. Let us be mindful of OA's unity with diversity policy, which respects our differences yet unites us in the solution to our common problem. Whatever problem you may have with food, you are welcome at this meeting. Today, we are delighted to have Holly G. from the United States joining us to share her experience, strength, and hope focused on spirituality of the 12 steps, living, and decisions. This meeting is being recorded. I would now like to welcome Holly G. to the group to share her experience, strength, and hope on the spirituality of the 12 steps, living, and decisions. Welcome, Holly.
Thank you, Mickey. Thank you, everybody. Hi, I'm Holly, compulsive overeater from California. I'm from Los Angeles, and I'm a 100-pounder. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you just a little bit about my program first, and then get right into the topic of, basically, it's about making big life decisions by working the steps through and letting God help me make those decisions in the right way. And I have some examples to give you. And also, the funny thing was, I thought of something. I think it was last night. I mean, that I worked the steps through as well. And I'm sure I'll have time. 50 minutes, 50. I love how Mickey just reiterates that 50 minutes. And that's a long time to speak. But I hope I have time to get into that too, because that's just another way of demonstrating how powerful the steps are and how powerful that God is. For me, I use God as my higher power. Use whatever you need to use. There's a lot of examples in Bill's story about different ways that you can put a name to God, but I just say God because it's easy. Anyway, let me get started. I'll tell you a little bit about my story, but I was blown away this morning at the Voices of Recovery. Part of my normal routine in the morning, my spiritual connection is to read. I have three meditation books I read, one of them being Voices of Recovery. And then I do several other things as well, prayers, meditation, and some writing. So whatever I'm writing on at the time. So that's kind of how my morning starts. On a weekday, then I start taking sponsee calls. But on the weekend, I have Saturday and Sunday, I have 7:30 meeting. So this morning I read this Voices, and I'm just going to read half of the page because it was exactly what we're going to talk about today. It says, humility as we encounter it in our OA fellowship places us neither above nor below people on some imagined ladder of worth. That's from the 12 and 12 of OA. Then this part, many of us feel discouraged in situations where our food is in order, yet the rest of our lives seem messy, out of control. We interact with people who don't think, act, or believe as we do. Some events don't follow our master plan. I always laugh when I read that part. When we step back and realize we are trying to control other people and events, we must remember that this goes against the humility necessary for eliminating the self-righteousness and self-absorption that block our full recovery. Oh my God, where did that come from today? That's today. So it was so funny that's what I'm going to talk about. So just to introduce myself, like I said, I'm from Los Angeles. Originally, I'm from a small town back east. And I've always been a compulsive overeater. I'm going to keep this rather short. I've always been a compulsive overeater from 5 years old. I mean, and I've always been quite overweight. My top weight is about 280 pounds. And how that looked was, well, I'll show you a picture too, but how that was is for my adult life, I just would be somewhere between 240 and 280 pounds. I would just go back and forth in that size. Okay. So I'd get up to 280 pounds. I would feel at 280 pounds, I would feel super uncomfortable, hard to move. Everything, as you can imagine. And I diet with some kind of diet my way down to 240, feeling better at 240. And then I'd go right back up. So I was never at a healthy body weight at all during my life at all. I mean, the pictures of the first Holy Communion, I was, what, 6? Overweight. That's what I'm saying. The whole time, all the way through, overweight. And I wanted nothing more than to be invisible, nothing more. Don't look at me, don't talk to me, because every time people talked to me, it was bad. All the way through that, all the way through school. I moved out to California. Some of it was to get away from that. My life back east was very, very small, completely in fear, everything. The other part of that is that I'm 66, so put yourself in that kind of time frame. Back then, being a gay person back east in a small town, looking very much like a man most of that time, that's just how I looked. Nothing I could do about it. That's just how I looked. And being 280 pounds, it was really... That's really hard to navigate, okay? I felt like I was just bombarded with criticism, judgment, and I mean, right out loud. So that's how I grew up. I got the heck out of there. When the first opportunity I could, I came to California. And it was completely God. And that's how I realized that God was always there, is that how did I get from there to here in Southern California? And with what I came out here with, what fit in the car, you know what I mean? I'm just like, and I started a new life. I did come with myself. So I came in the car too, but I started a new life, and that pulled me along through into recovery. Here's a picture of me. This wasn't way back then. I think it was just before I came into program. Not very good at this. Do you see that? Just sitting there. I'm sure this is about 280 pounds. I had just, oops. Oh, look. That's how you do that. So that's me, probably just before I came in the program. And that weekend, I know where I was. I was in Santa Barbara at a graduation on these little flimsy chairs. which is not fun. I'm sure you could tell. But that's pretty much how I said, a lot of plaid. Okay. There's, I show that picture and I'm just, there's a lot of plaid happening too. Not so much anymore, but it's just, that's how it was. Okay. So what happened was these little God shots started happening, and it got me into a very bad relationship. The first one was not good, not a good pick. It was the first person who paid attention to me, okay? First person, and it was so wrong. It was all wrong. But that's what happened. That is the truth. Got into that, and I got into, and she was a drug addict, by the way, which put me into Al-Anon. So I got into Al-Anon, and what happened there was how I got into Overeaters Anonymous. What happened there was I walked into a group that was as friendly and as welcoming as you can imagine. It was a gay fellowship of Al-Anon's, a meeting that was labeled gay. I went in and I got to hang with these beautiful people that welcomed me. And I didn't even start working there. I just hung with them. They let me hang with them. and I started to talk. Okay. I'm just starting to talk. Now this is about 33 or 34 years old. Now I'm comfortable enough with myself that I can talk. And of course there were people in that group that were in Overeaters Anonymous, because I had never heard of it. So now I'm there, and I heard them talk right away, and I asked them to come with them. Could I come with you to a meeting? And I did that, but I didn't really stay. I came back I had to stay out for 8 more years. I was in it for about 2 years, but I had to stay out. I wasn't ready. I had to stay out for 8 more years. What happened in that 8 years, though, was I got into a really good relationship with someone who was actually available. It was great. It was like, we're both available. And it lasted 15 years. Can you imagine? See the difference? There you go. And in that relationship, and then I came back into program in August of 2002. So that's what got me here. I just celebrated 20 years of abstinence just this last week, September 28th. My abstinence is 3 meals a day, no sugar, there's a fly. There's a whole bunch of things I don't pick up, but there's also, in that time, in that first maybe 5 years, I developed a food plan, a sober food plan that got me to, number one, a healthy body weight, slowly but surely. I sit now at a healthy body weight, 145 pounds down from 280, and I pretty much stay right here, and the food plan adjusts as I need to, because now it's, 20 years later. I think I'm more active now than I was for years and years and years, but that's kind of how my program is going. And I started, the reason I was
10 minutes.
Thank you. Perfect. The reason I was able to stay on that food plan, because why would I be able to stay on something like that, was that my sponsor started me on the steps right away. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. She gave me writing assignments and I did them. I started calling in my food. I asked for help from her, and I called her every morning at 6 a.m. And we started working. And there was no nonsense there. I'm going to tell you right now, there was no nonsense. And I was able to stay abstinent. I walked into the program, or to the meetings with, we have a great big inner group. So if you can imagine, the meetings are like, the meetings then especially, and the meetings were in person, of course, but they were 40, 50, 60 people, because it's right outside of Los Angeles. And I was able to stay on this sober food plan. I didn't know it was called sober then, but I do now. This food plan, and I was able to just slowly lose the weight. But when I walked in, there was no hope. I didn't come in to lose weight. By the time I walked in, I was so dead inside that I was frozen. I was like frozen dead inside. That's what scared me back into program. I was always 280 pounds. That was nothing new. That's how I felt. So when I came in, I sat down, and when she gave me those assignments and they were working the steps is what they were. She started me on the first three steps. That's what kept me going. Consequently, my weight's going down too. And I just let it go. I just watched it. I watched it and I thought, oh my, and it just kept going and it was great. So, but that's the least interesting part of this. I love walking around at a healthy body weight. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But the spiritual connection and the growth I've had and the just transformation of my life has been astounding. So let me tell you about a good example of working the steps through the big life decision. So in this, probably I worked the steps through twice before this happened. Now I'm sitting in this relationship, the good one, the long one, I should say, the good one in the beginning, but it was the long one. I'm sitting in this relationship. I'm going to program. I'm working my program. Very friendly, like it was all good. My partner kind of went in and out of program. She wasn't as steady as I was, but because when I came back, I came out, I didn't ever go out. I just stayed. So I was working things very consistently, but it came to mind, and I felt that anxiety building again, because my One of my character traits is being in fear of people. Fear of people, fear of abandonment, all that is in my character defects, which comes out every time I do the steps. But those are my big fears. So as I was working and I was having to, the fear of people started building, all right? And I'm working along and I'm doing okay, but I felt that something was wrong in my relationship. It started to get very dry, very stagnant. I felt that anxiety and fear come up, okay? So I knew something was wrong. So what I had to do is, and I expressed that to my sponsor. What I had to do is, it got pretty bad too. Because this is recorded, I'm just gonna leave it kind of general, but it got pretty bad. So now I have to make, my MO is to stay. My MO is not to do anything. Don't rock the boat. Remember, I stayed in that little small town until I was 30. don't make a step to one either side. This is taking care of the fear. But what it's doing is I'm building anxiety throughout the whole thing. Now, in the program, we know that if that happens, if I start having resentments, if I get into fear that I can't manage, even with God's help, if I get into that paralyzing place, I'm going to eat. And that is the last thing that I wanted to do. So after talking to my sponsor for a bit, I have to make a decision. Now I have to make a decision. I may have to end this relationship to be able to move forward in my life. So she suggested that we work through the steps on it because I really didn't know what was going to happen. This was new territory for me. Self-care was new territory for me. So we worked through the steps and it went kind of, so I don't lose my place. Step one, in this situation, I'm going to make it very basic. Can I leave my relationship? Is that the best thing to do? Is that the best thing to do for all involved, our common welfare in this household? Is this the best thing to do to step out? Okay. So in what ways, I had to write about what ways am I powerless over this situation? And I'll tell you, I was entirely powerless. I did everything I could to be a good partner. I did, and I'm working the program and I'm with a sponsor who's married and she's really guiding me strongly about how to stay, you know, what to do, how to be a good person. She's very hands-on. And all this time, of course, I'm abstinent. So I'm really clear-headed and we're working through these steps. The second part, and I knew I was powerless because this is not what I would have done. I would have been sitting right there even as uncomfortable as I was. Step two is about my relationship with God. Now I've built a relationship with God. I wouldn't have been there. God helped me through a lot. There was a lot of things that went on, but God helped me through so much. One of the questions I had to ask, there's two parts to step two. One of the questions I asked myself, and I asked myself this in a lot of situations, what does sanity look like to me? That's important to know. What does sanity look like? What would I think would be the best thing for all involved? That seems to be sanity to me, okay? And the other couple of questions is, of course, is God big enough to help me through? Am I going to be able to trust this God that I've developed this relationship with in these, it was probably 8 years in. Okay, so I had a little bit of time. Like I said, I'd been through the steps twice already. So what about my relationship with God? A really important part, I'm going to look at Bill's story. I got this stuff all over the place. Look at Bill's story, page 14. At the top, this is what I zeroed in on Bill's story. Like I told you in 12, 13, 14, he gives you all kinds of examples of names for God, names for the higher power. Like you can pick one, there's so many, but this one always zeroed in on me. It's a simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. It meant destruction of self-centeredness. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. Presides over us all. The Father of Light. See, that always rang true for me. I have a connection to light. I don't like darkness. I have a connection to light. And this Father of Light always made me feel like I was being guided, but not pushed. You know what I mean? So that was important. Step three. So now I'm going to make this decision to let God help me with the decision, if that makes any sense. I'm going to turn all this knowledge I have now, the powerlessness. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to work on making a decision. I got to make a decision. I can't just sit there. Action has to be taken. So I take step three every morning, make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care and concern of God. That's of utmost importance in this time. Number one, I was an anxious, nervous wreck. Okay. Walking through, I was sleeping about 3 hours a night, and I wake right up 2:30, 3:30 in the morning. That's just what it was like. What I did was in the step three, working the step three, I gathered around me, I think it was four women in program, four long timers in program that I saw daily, either daily or weekly, people that I knew, people that I was close to. I gathered these women around me. It's like, you guys, I'm making this decision. I need your help. So I'm working with my sponsor. I have people around me helping me my feet weren't even touching the ground by this time, because they helped me walk through this without any judgment or any, well, of course we all judge, but that's kind of a joke.
20 minutes.
Thank you. And they helped me walk through this all the way through to the other side. Then I did a step four. Now I have to come clean with my sponsor. I wrote out a fourth step. My part, which was important, of course, and things that I needed to do, let her know everything. And then gave a fifth step away. And then we went on from there. And in working the other steps, like working with six and seven, here are my character defects. I cannot, fear of abandonment is what's keep, did you understand? That's what's keeping me there. Fear of abandonment, fear of change, fear of people. That's what's keeping me in this relationship that was done. The relationship was done. What was happening was I was living with my best friend, and we could live in two separate places and both be better for it. Okay. So that's the decision that ended up being made. Eight and nine, I kind of sat on, because there was nothing to do at that moment. I had to walk forward. So that was done actually later. Amends were done later. And thankfully, as I worked through all this, there wasn't a lot of amends to make, because I was kept clean. I was kept clean by these women telling me exactly what to do, what to say, and how to proceed on without hurting anybody, especially myself. Okay. And then step 10 is about integrity. And that's what I think my primary concern at this point was, the personal integrity that I wanted to walk forward with. And all this time, I'm going to tell you that when I was physically moving, or physically, we're figuring out selling a house, packing up, splitting, that went actually remarkably well. But in all of that, I really relied on my higher power to walk through every day with personal integrity. And I did, and it was all good. Like we didn't have a problem with the splitting up part of the stuff. That's really difficult, I have to tell you. I had people around me, I moved twice actually. A really kind of good thing happened in there. I rented a room from somebody who needed somebody to rent a room. So it was really cool. Like, that was a positive step. Then the positives really started happening. I found a place to live, which is where I'm sitting right now. And I moved in and decision made. And I felt so supported by my higher power. I felt supported by, I changed, and in that I changed sponsors, supported by the people around me that work a program that's strong. And I also felt supported by just the universe. And then this is my next chapter. What happened after that is I worked this, once I settled here, I added a meeting after I settled here, because I could feel that I needed to have just a little bit more support, added a meeting. And I worked through the steps again, just to see, and this is where the amends came in, because now I'm clear, I'm settled, I made amends, and it all worked out great. But I worked the steps through again on the whole situation. So that was another time that really ended up centering me greatly. It was the perfect thing to do. The other part of this is, do you know that when you go through something, we get to pass that along. Right after that, right after I had settled in, an acquaintance or friend in program was going through the same thing. She was directed to talk to me, and I got to work through those very steps with her. Right. I mean, it was right on the heels. I think that healed me more than it helped her. But she went all the way through. She didn't stop. She made her own decision. And that really helped heal me by passing that along to somebody else. It was really pretty cool. It was somebody I was very, very fond of. So that was great. It was a good experience in that. And that was the step 12, passing that along. So that's what happened that time. So how am I doing on time?
You still have 5 more minutes before you get to 30 minutes.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. I lost track there. I got all into that. Did you tell? Can you tell? Woo. Okay. The next part I wanted to go through with you is that, and this is very recent. That was a while ago. This is very recent. So, oh my God. So, things were going along quite well, all right? And I had to, you know, I've had this job for a long time. I've worked at this company. It's a family-owned company. I've worked there for 24 years. I worked originally for the father of the family. He was a really cool guy. I was terrified of him. He was very set back. We didn't really have a relationship, but here's what I paused. I remembered what I wanted to tell you. When I was moving, you know, when you move and you buy a place and sell a place, there's a lot of time that takes. And I used up all the time I had overtime. And I don't know what happened with him, but I almost got fired. On top of all this stuff going on, he came into me with a list of things that he was unhappy with, which absolutely was a surprise and blew me away. I work by myself. It's like me and him. I didn't expect that. So with that, on top of that, it added so much anxiety. I couldn't believe it. So that happened as well. And I got to walk through that as well. It was very, very challenging. But I walked through it and I answered him, and I made another decision to really buckle down and do a good job. There was things that I slipped on. I was really preoccupied, but I just made this decision, like, this is a good job and I need to work. And I got my work ethic changed drastically. Okay. So then I got to do that. This guy, you know, as he got older and older, he started to slip. He was starting to slip. And I caught a couple of things. And by the time, what he did was he was slipping and getting behind. And what he did was he asked me to help him with his stuff, not just my stuff. He asked me, can you come over to my office and help me with my things? So the gift of that was I got to learn all of the other things that he used to do by himself. It was super interesting. I got to help him. If any of you have aging parents or something, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. There was bank accounts all over the place. He was losing track. I got to get all that little by little, get all that, work with him, And in that, we built a really good relationship. I was so happy about that. But then he got sick. He had a son. His son was not around very much, but I didn't like, his son and I didn't get along. To me, in my eyes, we didn't get along. When he called, which wasn't very often, thank God, my hair would stand up. I mean, it was like that, like, ugh. He took over the business, as you can tell. And in that time, he didn't even understand our grief. There's two of it. There's a guy in Arizona and there's me. Our grief and the dad declining. Like, we didn't even have a chance to grieve on that. But that worked, you know, it got very busy for a while. And then what I had to do is I was working 6 days a week. I mean, I was working. I was way overworking. I was working 6 days a week. And then he's doing all this stuff. And then the pandemic hit and I was still working 6 days a week. I was going into the office. I work in a medical building and I just never stopped. And so that started to wear on me. I can't even say that with a straight face. You can laugh. It's okay. That started to wear on me 6 days a week. Okay. Now I'm like 60, 62, 63, 6 days a week. I'm still going, right? So I had, something had to break. I had to make a decision. So I had to do that whole, I had to do this whole step work again, making a decision. And I didn't know what the outcome would be. Basically, you make a decision, am I going to just resign? I could just resign from this job. It was such a process. First of all, I had to go down to 5 days a week. So I went down to 5 days a week of work, right? That was incredibly hard to do. So now I have the whole weekend off. And then I go, then I have to make a decision. Am I going to resign or cut down? I don't even know what that looks like, but I can't continue. I am really hurting myself by this time.
30 minutes.
Thank you. So what I did was I worked the steps through again with, this had to be with a completely open mind because I didn't know what the outcome would be. I had no intention of stopping working. I had no intention of retiring. So now this was when I was 65. Now I'm 66. I had no intention of that. I'm chugging along. I don't want to be home. Of course, the pandemic didn't help. Okay. Cause it was just me here and meetings on Zoom. And I'd go to, I know why I was going to work so much. Cause I had to get out of here, but I had to make that decision again. And this was super hard. I ended up giving notice. I worked through the steps with my, I have a different sponsor now. I have a sponsor I've had for probably, well, I got her right after I moved. So it has to be 13 years. I have a sponsor that I've had for 13 years. So she knows what's gone on. She knows everything about me that I can think of. All right. I'm very open with her. I trust her completely. And she's an awesome human being and really supports me in taking care of myself. So what I ended up with was I ended up resigning is what I did, but with a caveat that I would stay there and work and catch up on all this old work that was not done, of course. I was working 6 days a week and getting further and further behind. So this was my solution and working through that. But the fear that had come up during that time, I had so much fear and so much. My boss triggered me so bad that it's like I had to go back to the steps again to work through that and really sit in reality. This is just a guy who is just as anxious as I am. He's grieving his father and he's not getting along with his sisters. It took so long for me. I have this deep-seated thing that happens that I have trouble getting over things. That's just part of my disease. I hang on to things, and that's part of my amends to myself is to let things go. So I worked through the steps again. I got in a much better place, a much more in reality, sitting in reality place, and that helped immensely. I gave notice. I But what ended up happening was he didn't hire another person to replace me so I could catch up the old stuff. I just kept going. Like, I cut down to 3 days a week is what I did. And so that's been this year. Okay, this year, January 1st, I work 3 days a week. And I had to kind of readjust. And I readjusted through the workflow. It's not going very well. Okay, it's not going like I thought. This is the part where it says it's not going like you think it's going to. It's not. This management company is slow to take over things. I'm trying to give it away. It's just that I have to keep centered in it and accept how everything is today. And that's what the resolution was. Now I have to actually make another decision. Like this has to change even more, which is okay. I can do that. But I feel like I'm connected with my higher power and can make that decision to really do what's best for me. Financial fear is not an issue. I worked through that before. I'm not in financial fear. I know that whatever happens, and in talking to my friends, they pointed out to me all the things I could do if I wasn't working there, you know, all the jobs I could do if I wasn't working there. And I got it. I saw it. It was clear. Yes, I can, if I need to quit, I can quit. But I worked through the steps on that again. And it really, really helped me. And so that's where I sit today on that. The other thing that is super, now we're going to kind of change gears on life. And the other thing that I remembered that I worked the steps through, and it is my, it ended up being a body image. Remember, I lived life at 280 pounds, and now I'm at a healthy body weight. There's a lot of things that go along with that, losing that much weight. And it was steady. It wasn't too fast. It wasn't too slow, but it was steady. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on with that. And there's a lot of stuff that went on with my body around that. So what, you know, I had been, I told you I was anxious, right? I suffer from anxiety for most of my life. So what was happening was I'll bet you 20 years, I was like picking my cuticles. And I mean, all the time. And I mean, it was bad. My thumbs were they were disfigured, distorted. My nails were incredibly bumpy. They didn't look like nails. And this went on for 20 years. This went on all through. And I got to a point, and I was always scared that I would get infected. My hands would get infected. But I kept doing this. It's just that's where my anxiety sat, was with my hands and any little imperfections I had. So at some point in there, when things were calm, this is what happens. When things were calm, all of a sudden, I'm like, I got to say something. I have to say something. I have to open my mouth and tell the truth and say, talk to my sponsor about this. This is a ridiculous situation. And it seems almost dangerous to me, you know? So when things had calmed down, everything was calm, this is what comes up. And I talked to my sponsor about, I just picked a day, like pick a day and talk to her. And I did that. And I told her what was happening. And I said, Shelly, this has gone on for 20, I bet you 20 years. It's been for, I can't even remember a time I didn't do this. And I'm really ashamed of my hands. I'm ashamed of what they look like. I think, what can I do? Like, I'm going to turn this over to you. My sponsor is a beautiful, always put together woman, nails always done, always dressed, like beautiful, put together. I don't know what she's doing with me, but we get along so well. I open my mouth and tell the truth and tell her about this. And she said, you know what? I did that too. And here's what I did. We made a plan of action. Okay. So I do certain things to help that. Number one is, where's the anxiety coming from? This is where I go back to my sponsor, and this is what she helps me with. Where is that anxiety coming from? And when it hits, what do you do? We have to take action. When I get anxious like that, I have to take action. It's like when we have a resentment, We have to put it on the 10 step. When we do that 10 step, we have to put write down that resentment and we have to take action. I just can't let it keep going. So we figured, you know, we worked together on this. I started to get manicure and no polish, because you remember who you're talking to. So I started to get manicure every 3 weeks. I went to a person, a woman that's in program, like we have a meeting, okay? I went to a person in program in AA that I had met before, and we just have the most beautiful time. She gives me a manicure. I turn this over to God every morning. I wrote a prayer that I say every morning to help me stop doing that. Help me stop picking on my thumbs. And when we worked the steps, when Shelly and I worked the steps through on this, here's what came out. I didn't expect this at all. I had body image issues from my body being so in, I'm going to use the word imperfect. It's just any imperfection in my body I would focus on. And that's what I'm going to be touching. Okay. I'm going to try to smooth it out. And it's just, that's part of the anxiety, but I'm going to try to smooth that, whatever it is, out. I also had a bug bite can do the same thing. I have a bug bite here and I'm touching it constantly. And this is what I worked the steps through on my body image, and it helped immensely. It stopped this totally, totally. It stopped. I felt so much better. They healed. And it's a everyday reminder that what happens is I get this anxiety comes up. It's just a character trait. The anxiety comes up. I have to turn it over to God. I take actions because actions are important. And then I do a 10 step and I let somebody know what's going on. That's the way that I do the daily. That's my daily steps. That's the daily stuff. In the morning, I write a letter, Dear God, thank you for this day. Here's what's going on for me. And then I usually say, help me get through the day. Please guide me. You know, I want to get out of the driver's seat.
40 minutes.
Thank you. I don't do well. I'm not going to do well in the driver's seat. Do you see who you're talking to? Right? But what happens is I get all the support I need through my higher power by working the steps, by going to meetings. I have the most beautiful, loving family around me of program people that I talk to daily. These are the people I talk to all the time. And I get reminded every day that everything's going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. It's a very steady slope that I keep climbing. You know, it's like you can walk up the steps, but I keep climbing these steps and I keep using the steps every day in whatever comes up. So for today, what I can tell you is that there was one other place that was important that I just wanted to read to you. It's a little shorty. Okay. Oh, yeah, this is good. It says, this is on page 42. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. What? I thought I was so self-sufficient. Remember, did I tell you my mom was schizophrenic? That's who I lived with. So I was so self-sufficient growing up that this program has had to have me change completely. I cannot be self-sufficient anymore. It says, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. I couldn't be more grateful for my recovery today. I could not be more grateful for my recovery, honestly. I have completely changed. As you see, I can talk. The way I lived my life before was extremely quiet, extremely shy. Don't look at me. Like I say, I only wanted to be invisible. And now I live quite out loud. I have hobbies. I have hobbies now. I have a little side hustle that I do that I absolutely love. And part of the reason for cutting down on work is that I can now take jobs on the side hustle that is during the week. So it's a whole different flip around for that. And it is really nurturing me and serving my soul. This is what makes me happy. But my life today is, I am happy and I am satisfied and I am connected and I am healthy. Always on my gratitude list, I do a 10-step every night and send it to my sponsor. Number one, I'm very open with it. I just tell her everything that's on my mind. I don't care what happens with it. I tell her everything. And I can tell you that there's always so much gratitude for a healthy body and my health. And part of this in cutting down on work, there was an enormous list of things that I wasn't doing. Self-care, right? Life stuff, estate planning, changing over to a better dentist. What else did I do? I mean, there was a whole list when I started last January. I worked through a whole list and then I made another list of all things. Things I wanted to do around the house, things for me, adult stuff that I didn't have time to do. And that was really, really hurting me. I always felt like I was behind. So now these days, on my days off, I have a plan. I take care of things. I take care of myself, medical appointments, the pets. They're sitting right here, by the way, wondering what all you're doing. And the pets, and I take care of, and I walk with friends, and I do these things. And it's with such an open heart that, and such gratitude. So I think I'm going to end there. That's me. And I was so glad to talk today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Holly, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us today. We will now be transitioning into our question and answer segment. I'd like to introduce Cheryl, who is our moderator for today.
Hey, thank you, Mickey. My name is Cheryl. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm your moderator today. Please continue to send me your questions for Holly in the chat, and I'll try to get through as many questions as I can. And I want to just first off, thank you, Holly. That was really interesting to me. And I've got several questions for you. So let me go ahead and get started with those. Someone said that you mentioned, I know several times that you have a sponsor, and they wanted to know how you think they might get a sponsor because they're based in a country where there are no physical meetings near them.
Well, you know, we have Zoom today. There's meetings on Zoom all the time now, and a lot of people have found their sponsors on Zoom. Just in my world, I'm from Los Angeles, or right outside Los Angeles, there's two big meetings on Saturday morning and Sunday morning. And I can just say, I'm just going to say Sunday morning is a little bit bigger. It's about 200, 250 people. And it's because, and it's from people all over the world. There's people all over the world that come there, and there's people all over the United States that come there. It just grew and grew and grew. And people have sponsors there that they've never met in person. They've gotten to know them through sharing at that meeting, and then they call them. And so what I think is important is that this person would go to meetings and listen. And go to Los Angeles meetings, go to meetings wherever they are. I mean, there's people in that meeting from Scotland, UK, India, all over. And I've had a sponsee from a different land as well, which is great. I love it, to be honest. It's very possible to get a sponsor on a Zoom meeting. People put their name in the chat with the tagline sponsor, start calling. That's what I would recommend. Hope that answers the question.
It sure does, Holly. Thank you very much. And someone did send me something in chat that I just posted for everyone that will give information also about finding a sponsor, but thank you very much. The next question I'm going to read, the person said, I really relate to you, Holly, when you said that you have trouble letting go of things. So you mentioned how you have an amends to yourself to let go. Would you mind sharing what you came up with and what that amends looks like for you?
Sure. I'm going to just stay unmuted because that's better. how do I make amends? Well, here's the first part of it is that what I've noticed in my recovery, and you know, I work two programs. What I've noticed in my recovery is a common trait in me is I have trouble letting go of things. And this good example is this first relationship I was in. It was horrible, bad choice. But I hung on to that relationship for 4 years. Okay. A lot of money went out of that wallet with this money, time, nothing about it was honest. That's what it was about. But once I ended it, I held on to that shame for a long time. I finally realized that I think I hang on to things like shame, guilt, fear for longer than most people do. I kind of see people working through stuff. So what I had to do was I had to kind of let that be and know that I had to work a little harder and give myself a little leeway, but keep working on this stuff. Just like this issue with work, I talked about, oh my God, this should have never gone on this long, but it did. The reality is it did. And I've had to work every day to work through this, so I wasn't going to work with my hair on fire. You know, I can't function like that. So I've just realized it's a self-realization. I hang on to things a long time, but so it makes it gets me the opportunity to just keep on working. You know, nothing happens to us, it happens for us. So this progression of that I've gone through is really for me, and it gives me an opportunity to change. I must be able to get really uncomfortable to do the work to change, and I'm in 100%. I'll do it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Have you had any experiences where you thought you had a specific idea of what God's will was for you regarding action that you were going to take, and then you realized that it wasn't God's will? And if you did have that, how did you handle that?
That's a really good question. Usually what I think is that if it's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. I'm not going to be able to really stop it. But more concrete, I think that if I'm going to make some kind of a decision or go a certain way, it's going to go easier. I think it actually goes easier. Things open up. I'm able to walk through it. But when it's not God's will and I'm supposed to not do something, I start hitting bumps, big bumps and hopefully God throws a wall up. So I'm going to run right into it. And that's what I ask for in that God letter. Make things clear, please. God, please make this clear what I'm supposed to do today. You know, what's going to be the best? You tell me, because I want you to be the director today. And it's a meditation thing. It's a prayer and meditation action. I ask and then I listen.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You obviously felt very supported by others in OA. That was so clear. What do you think you did to help connect with others so much?
Well, you know, I'm really steady. Number one, I'm steady. I have home meetings and I'm always at those home meetings. And I think that's really important. If I don't show up in a meeting, I'm getting texts. Where are you? Like, what's going on? And I, you know, years ago when we were in person, you know, sometimes I wouldn't go to some meeting because I'm leading another meeting. And that's pretty much the only reason I wouldn't be at a home meeting, but because I'm leading something else. But I'm steady at meetings. I always put my number down. I share, I do service, and I think service is what helped me get to know everybody. I know in the beginning, my sponsor, I didn't realize when I asked her to be my sponsor, she was just a little bit less scary than everybody else was, but she started me writing. She also started me in service right away. Help with this fundraiser. And so that's how I got to know people and I got to be connected with others. And then I can pick those people that I think are really strong and that we're like-minded, and that's who I ask for help when I need help. It's like the phone becomes a lot lighter at that point. Thanks.
OK, Hey, thank you. And I also want to add on to that. Like I personally have never been in a meeting with anyone. I've only done Zoom meetings. And I think people kind of got shut down with COVID, only Zoom meetings. So do you have any suggestions for Zoom? Do you feel, is there anything you do extra above and beyond that helps you connect with people when you were having meetings just through Zoom?
Wow, that's you know what? If they're in different places, the telephone becomes really important at that point, is to get numbers and call people and say hi. What I did, and I think I really did it to save me, is that I scheduled, people started to get together a little bit, like we'd meet in the park if we're in the same city or in the same, area. We meet in a park and sit and have a coffee, like just sometimes take a walk. I'm a big walker. I walk for my exercise. 90% of my exercise is walking. And I would actually, walk with somebody, just ask another member to walk and we'd have a good talk and stuff. If that's not possible, got to use the telephone. Some people do their sponsor calls on Zoom. And that would help too. Just face-to-face sometimes really helps. Stay after the meeting.
Hey, thank you, Holly. Sure. I have two questions now, and they're kind of related, but they're enough different that I'm not going to combine them. The first one is, you talked about sitting with unanswered questions. Someone quoted, what does sanity look like to me? What is the best for all? And is God big enough? When you have these unanswered questions, how does your process look? Do you do it a couple times a day in the morning? How long does it take? Just could you kind of share that process with us related to that one?
Okay. Those are my questions for step two. Those are my questions to God. So what I would always in the morning, I have to do my stuff in the morning when it's very quiet. I get up really early. I start my sponsee calls at 6. So before then, I'm doing my reading, writing. I write that letter to God, and whatever comes up, come up, right? And if, of course, I wake up, I'm anxious about something. There's something on my mind. That's what I write down, and I turn it over to God. I think that's, and then during the day, of course, some things come up after that, during the day. I make sure I stop. I actually go outside most of the time, and I'll stand in the sun for a little while. Remember the light? I'll stand in the sun. It looks like I'm watching the parking lot, like security. I'm not. I'm actually meditating. So I'll turn that again. If it takes 5 times in a day, it takes 5 times in a day. So what? I have to turn that stuff over to God and keep going because I have to get through my day. But that, sometimes it takes several times to do that.
Thank you. And then the follow-up, you'd answered part of it, but about how long a time does it take you usually each day do you spend working the program, not counting meetings? And also, how has that changed since you're now retired?
Okay. So if I can walk into my office from the drinking coffee, I try to walk in and give myself 30 minutes to do all those things, meaning I do the meditation books, I write my letter to God, and I do some meditation, I do my prayers, and then I do, like right now, I'm writing through that, the OA body image and sexuality book. I'm writing through that with my sponsor. That's my literature work. So I try to do some literature work as well, but that's what we're working on. So that's about 40 minutes. That's about 40 minutes. And how it's changed since I've been retiring, not that much in a good way, because what I'm trying to do, I tried to sleep a little bit later just to get more rest, because I was only sleeping about 6 hours a day, a night. So what I try to do is, I still have sponsee calls. It's not those, but I don't have to go right to work after that, like I say on a Tuesday. So I think that I'm going to do that reading and writing after the sponsee calls instead of before. No, it's not working as well as I thought. So what I found is it's just better to get up and do that first. You know, I have time later, but I really do the best in, early in the morning because it's quiet.
Hey, thank you, Holly. Yeah. And I do have two more questions left. So I just do want to encourage if anybody has any questions they want to please email me because I've only two left to ask you. Mm-hmm. Holly, someone wanted to know, are there any specific questions that you write about as part of your using the steps when you make decisions every day? Are there certain questions that you have that your go-to questions when you're trying to figure things out that you would use and you would share with us when you're doing your writing?
Absolutely, yes. Let me say it in this in the right way. A question that is almost daily is, God, please direct my day. Help me have a peaceful and productive day. And you tell me what the priorities are. That's really important. Because if I get overwhelmed with the list of things, and I'm not talking about home stuff so much because that nothing's on fire over here. But this work situation, I have so much work that I have to prioritize. And I let God help me prioritize things. And that's the most important thing. If I take that job off of me and put it on another entity, it's better. And it usually works pretty well. I'm able to prioritize and walk into the office without too much, you know, fear, without too much fear of doing the wrong thing.
And I think you've hit a lot of this, but I'm just going to ask in case there's something else. Can you talk a bit more about step three in the part of making decisions, and how do you come to know what God's will was?
Okay. I'm going to think of another example. Just saying that prayer is wonderful. That prayer is wonderful. And I say it every single morning, and I say it slowly. So I really let it sink in. But I'm always asking God for what direction to go and how I can help others. And I mostly don't know what my will is. I'm sitting here and I'm very content and happy where I am. Okay. And my life is good and I just want to keep going. But I also want to be open to change. I want to be open to what God wants me to do next. Show me what you want me to do, God. Like I say, I am working a little bit extra with my, I do drumming, drum circles. And I've been working extra with that. And I took the opportunity to be, my teacher now hires me to help him during the week. And that's why I can, you know, I have these days off and I can actually accept jobs during the week. And just the joy that creates in other people when we're facilitating that. Sometimes we'll go retirement home and it puts me in a situation where it's incredible joy. The people, just watching people's faces have such a good time and relaxing and laughing and dancing and, you know, that's it. I wanted to step out and do that. It was a little scary at first. I'm used to this working in this office by myself, and now I'm out doing this other thing. And that's what God's will looks like to me. That's, you know, what can I do to create joy in myself today? Help others do it in them. So thanks for that.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Mm-hmm. I have got a few more questions in. Has relapse been a part of your story? And if it has, how did you handle it to get back on, and what did you do to get back on track?
Well, it was a big part of my story. As I said, I came in probably 93, 94, the first time. And that's when I said I walked in with other members of Al-Anon that were in OA as well. And they, you know, took me to a meeting and then I kept going. But here's what happened. I didn't ask or keep a sponsor for any length of time. I did go to meetings pretty consistently. I had some regular meetings I went to. I did get an abstinence of 3 meals a day and no sugar, because what was happening was I was eating all the time in my work, I would go from place to place, from stop to stop, and I'd have to eat in between. I'd have to stop and get something to eat to have the courage to go to the next place and talk to the next person, whatever it is, right? So I was eating all the time, and so my abstinence got to be 3 meals a day. And I had stopped eating sugar on my own a while back, but that's, of course, not part of my abstinence. It was actually making me quite sick. So, but what happened was, by not working with a sponsor for any bit of time, of course, I wasn't hanging on to anything. And when I got into this new relationship, it became less important. And I was going to 3 meetings and then 2 meetings and then no meetings. I walked myself right back out of program. I didn't even realize, it wasn't even a conscious thing, but I had no base. I wasn't doing any work. I had no base. So I stayed out, and my partner and I bought a house, and we had we started a catering company out of the house. Okay. That's not a good, don't do that. If you're in that situation, we started a catering company, because when you buy a house, there's a lot of expenses, right? So realizing that we were both, you know, I'm a diner cook. My dad owned a diner. So I'm a diner cook. She's a baker. So we opened this catering company. We're both working full time and we're doing catering meals for people. So we did that for about 4 years, but I was out for 8 years in between. The time I walked out to the time I came back. And what one of the things that I know got me back in the program, this is August of 2002, when I came back, was that we had stopped that catering maybe 6 months before. You see, I was running so fast. I was working and doing the catering, running so fast, I didn't even realize that I had sunk down so low. But when I stopped doing that and everything quieted, that's when I felt that dead feeling. So it worked when it worked, but thank God we stopped. And then I walked back into program in August of 2002, just because of the way I felt inside, not for any other reason. Something had to change. And I knew that I didn't work the steps before the first time. And I knew enough to say to myself, just give it a shot. Just go in, find a sponsor and work the steps. If it doesn't work, you can always leave. But you didn't even do it yet. So that's what happened. I walked in with an open mind, no hope to lose weight, just I had to be somewhere. I had to do something, be somewhere. So I just sat down all the way in my seat that time.
Okay, so in the last 20 years, it's been rock solid, no—
Rock solid, mm-hmm. No thought to leave, no thought to go anywhere.
Okay. Two people have asked questions about your sponsees. One asked, how many sponsees do you have and what amount of time do you give each sponsee?
Well, it was kind of regimented before. They're all waving. It was kind of regimented before. I probably had 4 or 5, and we would start calls at 6, and it was every 10 minutes. Okay. They'd get 10 minutes in the morning. They had to send their food in before 11. Text in their food commitment or whatever, or give it to me when we called. They're all working the steps in different ways or working literature in different ways. But during our call, we do reading and writing. I hear their writing. And then if we have to talk about something, and I always tell them, you have 10 minutes, but if you need to talk more, we'll talk at the end of the day or when I have a few minutes. So they're required to give me their committed food and always be working the steps. Now the times have changed. That's the only thing that changed. And I think I have 7 sponsees now. So, but they're same thing. I have some old timers. They're a pain in the ass, but it's okay. I mean, like 40 years. They don't have to give their food. They're like, no.
Holly, can you talk a little bit more about your work as a sponsor when you're supporting your sponsees making a decision? Because it seems like it can be hard to resist giving specific directions, especially if the sponsee is asking for advice.
Ah, okay. Yes, I'm pretty outspoken, and I tell them that to begin with. And I do comment on things, and I do comment on food. And my purpose is to help my sponsees get to a healthy body weight. So that put aside now, when we're doing step work, or they're really, if they're in the barrel on something, I just make sure I stay really close. And a lot of times what I'll ask is, do you want feedback on that? If they're just right, if I'm hearing writing, I say, well, do you want feedback on that? Or what would you, how can I help you today? That's another question I ask a lot. How can I help you today? I don't really want to give advice. I can give my personal experience, but that's only mine. I have sponsees in all different walks of life. So sometimes I don't have that experience. Sometimes I can tell them to go talk to so-and-so that does, though, you know. So I just try to be really open-minded and be supportive. But like I say, I am quite outspoken as well. Too bad. Uh-oh.
Thank you. Also, there's a question. If you're willing to give your email or phone number in chat, that would be appreciated. Yeah. So I wanted to make that.
I'll do that.
Comment to you. And mm-hmm. The next question is, when you're feeling anxiety, do you work a 10th step? And the follow-up is, what do you do when you realize you're in anxiety if it's not the 10th step?
Well, there's two different ways that I do that. Yes, at the 10 steps at the end of the day, and I'll write about whatever happened that day. I have several questions in my 10 step that deal with. One of them is, did I practice humility today? Meaning, was I non-judgmental? Did my ego take over or whatever? And then the other, is there anything that you want to tell your sponsor? That's the question. Or don't want to tell your sponsor. That'll come up too. But that's at the end of the day. The anxiety, I can say I was anxious. And, you know, on that 10 step when it says, were you resentful, angry, afraid, or something, I also have anxious on there. And I can put, yes, this is what I was anxious about. This made me anxious today, or whatever. But the anxiety really is in that's with my morning work and prayer and meditation. I think the meditation and the prayer is my solution. Stopping, I got to stop, step out, pray and meditate for a few minutes. And then whatever it is usually subsides a little bit.
Thank you, Holly.
Sure.
Another question about sponsees is, have you had a sponsee that you needed to let go of? And what was the process you went through to decide if you were going to let go of the sponsee?
Yes, of course, there has been, even in the beginning. One thing that'll come up is if a sponsee and I have a difference of opinion, it's not opinion, a difference in how I think of abstinence. Whereas if they're claiming abstinence and they're really not, if they're not following the definition of abstinence and we're starting to argue about that, then they need to get somebody else, because I don't co-sign bullshit, okay? There's a fly here. I'm sorry. I'm waving. But another situation came up, and it was with a sponsee that I had for a long time. I mean, from the beginning, probably for 12 or 13 years. And what happened was, I saw this. Sometimes a sponsee will start lying, okay? Just not telling the truth, leaving things out. They'll start lying about their food. Then you see them after a couple of months and they're way bigger, okay? And then they're checking out. I'm not connecting anymore. And I noticed with this woman that I just felt that connection and that we were having. I felt it get less and less and less. And then ultimately, sometimes then the writing gets less and less and less. And you notice that people are kind of not really present in the conversation, and they're not present in the meeting, and you're not seeing them. And it gets like that. And so finally I had to say, and it took forever. I mean, I really don't take that lightly, But I just had to say to this woman, I had to say, I'm not connecting with you at all. I think it would be better if you find someone that you can connect with. I mean, it was quite a blatant thing. So when that came up, I did let the person go. And a lot of times people let me go too, and that's fine too. It's about, we have to have somebody that we can be open and honest with and talk and show up for and show up with. Like walk, I always say to my sponsees, like, we are hand in hand. Let's stay hand in hand. So that's kind of how it goes. But yes, many, that's happened.
Hey, thank you, Holly.
Sure.
The next question, even with using the steps for major life decisions, have you experienced procrastination or insecurity about it afterwards?
Absolutely, of course, yes. Yeah, absolutely. These life decisions are big things. They're big life-changing decisions, and even small ones. I don't think life is meant to be perfect. I think it's meant to be bumpy and scratchy and full of joy and full of whatever. And, you know, we meet people, we get into relationships that don't work. I don't think any of that matters. As long as I stay abstinent and I can walk forward and continue on, and as long as I can tell the truth about whatever's going on, I will be helped. I will be pulled through. My higher power and my people around me aren't going to let me fall on my face. So that's pretty much my belief in that. It's not going to be perfect because we're not perfect people.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Mm-hmm. I do want to mention it's nearly time to end the question and answer session today. We have about 6 minutes left, and I'm going to move on to the next question. Can you give an example of making an amends that did not go well for you? And what was your experience with it?
Well, sure. A lot of them did go well. Let's say this. I didn't have too many bad experiences. I think it was uncomfortable enough to make amends to my dad before he passed away. It was one of the first ones I made because I had to go back east to do it. And also people, this is on my first run through the steps. I stole a lot to feed my addiction when I was, you know, way back we're talking, when I was, a teenager. I had no money. So I was stealing, I was asked sometime, how come you're so fat if you don't have any money? Like, how do you buy your, well, I stole it. That's, you know, so I had to go back and pay back all those stores and I had to pay back my dad for all the things I took out of his jacket pocket. You know, I was his office manager at the diner. Diner's all cash business, by the way, all cash. And he had a drawer in the desk. I'm the only one that had the key. The brothers and me had the key to the office. And he showed me a little pile of cash. He said, if you never need anything, there's always going to be some cash right here if you need it. Well, as you can imagine, I just kept taking little bits out of that for so long. And, you know, I had to make amends to him. That was probably, I really felt a lot of shame around that because he was so generous. But it went okay. I paid him back and he assured me that I'm not the only one that did that. But, and it was hard to make amends. I had to make amends to my partner that I had ended the relationship. That actually, it went well for me. I mean, I made a very, very general amends, which was I said exactly what I needed to say, but it wasn't received in any amount of warmth. You know what I mean? But it was okay. And that was okay. That was okay. I did what I had to do. There's a process that I use of making amends. And one of the questions that I ask the other person is there anything that you can think of that I haven't brought up? You know, please tell me. And, you know, if there's anything I can do to make this better or make amends to you. And it was pretty much dead silence. So, but other amends that I made went very well. And I've had amends made to me that went following that were actually quite healing. So that's that.
Okay, thank you, Holly. And I've got one more question for you. And the question is there a difference between anxiety and fear? And I'm assuming they're wanting to know how you deal with them through the steps, if you deal with them any differently, your anxiety and your fear.
I think there is a difference. I think fear is usually has a subject. Either it's a fear of a person, a fear of people, fear of economic insecurity, fear of abandonment is huge for me. Once I had a name for that, I felt so much better. That was a big one. Anxiety is very free floating. And that's what I use the prayer and meditation for. It comes up and sometimes I don't even know what it's about. But it's very, very manageable now. Now that I'm clean, now that I'm clear-headed, it's very manageable. I have things, you know, I have direction from my sponsor, things to do. Sometimes I go to outside help, and it's really been not so bad in the past 5 years, you know, just by working, doing things I've told you that I do. Much better.
Hey, our question and answer time has now come to an end. And I want to thank you so much, Holly, for coming to our meeting, giving us your time, your experience, your hope, sure. And your strength, sharing all that. Thank you so much. And I'm now going to hand back the meeting to our chairperson, who's Mickey today.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for your service. And Holly, again, thank you so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. In closing, I'd like to again thank Holly and all of you for your service and coming here today. By following the 12 steps, attending meetings regularly, and using the OA tools, we are changing our lives. You will find hope and encouragement in Overeaters Anonymous. To the newcomer, we suggest attending at least 6 different meetings to learn the many ways OA can help you. The opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Please remember our commitment to honor each other's anonymity. What you hear here, whom you see here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Let's all reach out by phone or email to newcomers, returning members, and each other. Together, we get better. To close the meeting, will Robin please unmute and read the promises, which will be screen shared?
Hi, Robin, compulsive eater. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. From Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.